Until I had visited the San Diego Zoo last winter, I had never seen a real live sloth. They look like koala bears in Australia, except they live upside down on branches. And as I stood there in front of their enclosure, fascinated, I thought of the poem by Theodore Rothke entitled The Sloth, about these little primitive, slow-moving mammals that spend most of their time, their life, upside down from branches of a tree. In moving slow, he has no peer. You ask him something in his ear, he thinks about it for a year. And then, before he says a word, there, upside down, unlike a bird, he will assume that you have heard. A most exasperating lug. But should you call his manner smug, he'll sigh and give his branch a hug. Then off again to sleep he goes, still swaying gently by his toes. And you just know he knows that he knows. Now, that little poem reflects the standoffishness of the sloth. It inhabits its own little world, nestled there in the tree branches, as though he were always all alone on a remote little island. Call him smug, and he just sighs and settles back again against his branch. He could not care less about anything new, or even a new idea. Nothing can disturb his complacency. He knows everything worth knowing. Moreover, he even knows that he knows. Nothing could ever convince him that he's really quite narrow-minded, that he's not at all the wisest of creatures, that very likely he's insular, provincial. He doesn't realize that a source outside of himself could really enrich his little enclosed life. And that's exactly the picture that today's gospel gives us about the way in which the disciples of Jesus show, reflect, manifest the characteristics of the sloth and people in the church today. Today in the gospel, Jesus decides to pray in a mountain. After having multiplied bread and fish for 5,000 people, you would think that the people would be impressed with his powers, taking care of them. But those in the boat realize that the strong winds and the waves are making it difficult. They see Jesus walking toward them on the water. They're terrified. They have a very narrow-minded faith. It's not possible, they think, that Jesus could do this. They are narrow and restricted in what they consider the possibilities of Jesus. And so he instructs Peter to walk toward him across the water. But Peter panics, and then he sinks. Peter also, even though he is the first, has been living in his own little world where people simply do not walk on water. He knows it cannot be done. This is the one miracle he feels that even Jesus cannot perform. He is not alone because the other disciples really, in all the years with Jesus, were half asleep. Because they all seem to know that they know everything worth knowing. They're no longer open to the beautiful new possibilities in life, the good news that Jesus has come to tell them about. In particular, Peter is another difficult moment when Jesus says that he must suffer a great deal and die before his ministry is concluded. Peter says, no, not you. Again, Jesus says, you are judging me by your own limited human standards. Peter is a most exasperating lug, a narrow-minded refusal to open up his mind and heart to the new life, to the new meaning in life that the Lord wants to give him. We're like that too. Recently in the New Yorker, where there was a little cartoon of two telephone switchboard operators talking to each other, and one says to the other, we're going to spend our summer vacation in area codes 603, 802, and 617. How much that is like us. We withdraw into our own private little world. We insulate ourselves. And we view the possibilities of life through the narrow perspective of our own mindless complacency. We're just like that switchboard operator who looked out into the world and all she saw, not all the beautiful possibilities, but area codes. Instead of envisioning the inviting beaches of Arcadia National Park, the scenic treasures of the Green Mountains, the historic landmarks of the Revolution, all she saw were numbers, 603, 802, 617. I looked them up. You see, walking on water is not something that only Jesus can do. He really meant it when he talked to Peter. And he calls each one of us, because we are all the disciples of Jesus. To walk on water, Jesus meant, we are all called upon to take a risk, once in a while at least, to learn to let go, to place ourselves in the hand of the Lord, to take a risk. In biblical language, the little fishing boat is really an image of the kind of security that Jesus calls us to leave behind. What does it mean then in the gospel to get out of the boat? Try to remember that the people in biblical times thought always of the sea or any kind of deep water as a symbol of everything that is demonic. For them, the underworld was not fiery, it was watery. For that generation of people, long, long ago, every single body of deep water was like a Bermuda Triangle, filled with lurking terrors. Water for them and for us, deep water, signifies everything that is alien, different, frightening, dark, the image of new ideas. I know what it felt like for Peter to sink in Lake Galilee. Over 20 years ago, when I was still young and strong, I went swimming in Lake Galilee on a Sunday. And lo and behold, they water ski there now, I was undone and almost drowned by a water skier who came too close. As I went down the first time, I had a pious thought. Is this what Peter felt like? But thank goodness a strong Arab tour guide rescued me. But ever since that time, I've been walking on water, that is, learning to take risks. Although around here, I quite often have a sinking feeling. Now this fear of water that we all have keeps us clinging to this boat of conventional lifestyle. We're so afraid that we spend so much time defending ourselves against all criticism and threat. That's what the church has done for a long time. So much time and energy is spent doing that. But Jesus invites us to open our hearts to take seriously other points of view that are good for us, to step out of the security of that little fishing boat and to find a way of life that is more expansive, more open to new ideas, a new generous way of living which takes courage, because it means letting go of security. To let go of the life we are accustomed to rather than cling. It means learning to believe that we do have a God who loves us better than we do ourselves. In a word, it means having faith. None of us is very good at that. Each of us is like Peter. We each have a kind of complicated mixture of faith and doubt in our heart. And like Peter, we are called to try to let go. And like Peter, if we're not too proud, we can always reach out a hand for help to the risen Jesus, who is always with us, even when we're sinking. When we learn to let go, and if we do happen to sink, the Spirit of the risen Jesus is always there. And he's always saying to us, "It is I, do not be afraid. I have called you by name, and you are mine, even when you are sinking."